City Commission meeting. If you've not done so already, would you please remember to silence your cell phones? We, I don't believe Reverend Harity is here, is she? No.
Okay.
We're going to have City Manager Randy Knight read the invocation. If you all would remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance afterward, we appreciate it. Mr. Knight.
Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day and for the many blessings, Lord. We thank you for this community and, for Father, for each person that chooses to serve this community, Lord. We pray for our public servants that are out there in the field each day, putting their life in danger to make this a better place to live. And, Lord, we thank you for the City Commission as they deliberate tonight. Give them wisdom in everything that they do, Lord. Help it to be to glorify your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Randy, thank you for that blessing. We appreciate you standing in there. Folks, I have a couple of minor adjustments to the agenda, if you'll bear with me. I'd like to move item 10, which is the Library and Event Center decision discussion, to just after the city attorney's report. We have some folks who cannot stay longer, so we'll move that up to make it 6A, if you're okay with that. And
can we remove 11D?
Yeah, well, so you're getting ahead of me. I will also move item 7, the Sunrise statistics, up prior to the discussion of to reconvening as a CRA. I thought that discussion may inform that decision there. So we'll be moving that up. And we are continuing item 11D, which is the ordinance that is on the agenda for the city attorney has some discussion points and some things he needs to address. So with that, I'll seek a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
So, Mr. Mayor, to be clear, the 9D will not be heard tonight.
11D will not be heard tonight. We're continuing it. Yes. Okay. Tabling it.
Mr. Mayor? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
When 11D comes back, can we please ask that it have a staff summary and recommendation with it? It doesn't tonight, and I know it's going away, but when it comes back,
I'm okay with that. I mean, we have the city attorney's position.
Absolutely.
Okay. Filter it through there. Great. First thing on my report, Mayor's report, is Dave Zuzzi. I'm going to turn that over to you, sir, if you wouldn't mind coming forward.
Thank you, Mayor and Commission. I'd like to bring up Tran and Dudot, if I could, please. These guys are the guys that actually did all the good work. Mayor, I'm very pleased to present to the Commission the 2016 Plant Operation Excellence Award for our Swoop Water Plant. This is a award that is not what I would call a participation award. It is an award that the state actually reviews all the operation, maintenance, and compliance for the plant for the whole year. They inspect the plants. This is something that is for this entire central district, which is multi-county. Very pleased to have won this award. It's the second time this plant has won, and some of our other plants have won it as well. But it's a very distinct honor for us to receive it. It's an unsolicited award, and I just wanted to have these guys recognized for their good work.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Sure.
Thank you, guys. Next, folks, not on my agenda, but I'd like to bring, we have the CEO of the Warner Park Chamber of Commerce, Betsy Eckford, here, and she's got a couple of young folks she'd like to introduce.
Good afternoon. I'm Betsy Gardner Eckbert, and I'm really pleased to present to you two local high school students, Jonah Gottschalk and Griffin Lucky, who are both choosing to spend their junior work experience this week at the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce. And I'm very pleased to say that they are not filing papers. They are working in collaboration with city staff, particularly Kyle's office, Tori's office, to help collate and gather data on just how wonderful it is to live, work, and play in Winter Park. They're doing an economic scorecard on behalf of the chamber, and hopefully if the city approves it, will be something we can co-brand and all be very proud of. But I'm very pleased to have these two young men working with us this week, and I appreciate your recognition of them.
Thanks, Betsy. Thanks for the initiative. Thanks, guys. unfortunately, you have to sit through these city commission meetings now. So
these are exciting, Steve.
Wow. Hey, folks, I have the board appointments for the Golf Advisory Board. You should have all received those in your packet. I think the only one sitting that didn't turn them in is Aaron Bearden,
right.
Mr. Bearden. He's agreed. He is a actually, Mr. Bearden was here, if you all might remember, the young couple that was here to discuss the Rollins project last meeting. Mm-hmm. He lived directly across that. That's Mr.
Yep.
Bearden.
Yep.
So anyway, I present.
He spoke for the first time from the commission.
He did. Right? He did speak for the first time. So I present Mr. Schaefer, Mr. Reicher, Mr. Israel, Mr. Cacciarella, Mr. Janella, Mr. Hagerty, Mr. Deal, and Mr. Bearden for approval. So that is my motion.
I'd like to move them.
Okay, that's a second.
I'll second it.
Okay. I'm taking mine as the motion. And
Sarah's the second.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Further discussion? Okay. You'll notice, too, that I had a stagger. Were they in there staggered? I have them staggered because, again, they're going to be three-year terms, so I had to put somebody in for 1 year, somebody in for a couple for 2 years. But then again, I'm looking to reappoint if they'd like to be reappointed. So we'll open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address this item, please step forward. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
There was a little bit of confusion because of some email traffic that went back and forth, and I know this is premature, but on the email we mentioned potentially in May moving Phil Keene onto historic preservation, out of historic preservation onto Board of Adjustments.
So can I hold that for
yes,
until we're done with this motion?
Great, because I just wanted to ask
absolutely,
you something about
certainly.
That. Thank you.
Cindy, would you please read the roll on that?
Sure. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Commissioner, since we're discussing the boards, certainly your comment or
it's,
your question.
It's just an observation that Mr. Keene is the only architect now on the Historic Preservation Board. He's the only architect other than a landscape architect, is what staff told me.
Mr. Ball, I believe.
Is a landscape architect is what they told me.
Okay.
The only reason I bring that up is what I was going to ask is if you would check with staff and maybe get some recommendations for an architect to take his place. Because it does elevate, I do think it elevates the professionalism of the board.
I think we have a requirement, too, if we can.
We do.
That. So
perfect.
I'm happy to do that. Just right. So you're aware, too, Mr. Keene is not being moved over at this time.
Right.
There was not that opening for him.
Good.
So that will be something that will happen in May. And prior to that, I'll have an appointment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So he'll stay on where he is right now?
He is staying where he is for now, yes.
Just not till the end of his term. He's going to leave this year instead of next year. 2018 is when his term ends.
Yeah, basically nothing's happening.
It's okay.
Until May.
Yeah, it's okay. Right. I just wanted to put that little bug in your ear about the architect. That's all.
Bug caught. I got
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Folks, what I have on here is a discussion of fiber. This is something that has been discussed at the city and the city commission level for, I don't know, a decade, Randy, when initial discussions first begun about fiber network. It's gone through different iterations. It's come forward. We've looked at a consultant's report on it. And I'd like to try to move this forward because if you're like me, you hear from people multiple times about dissatisfaction with the service that they are offered, a fairly singular service. And what I'd like to do is pull together a board of another task force to look at it and get the citizens' perspective on this. We've taken it through staff. We've looked at it. It seems to be kind of caught in this little bit of a whirlpool. I've had some individuals come up to me, and I'd like to create and appoint a task force to take this to the next step and present a recommendation to the city. We have the technical aspects of it, which are included in that report, and I'd like them to sort through that and look at it from a business perspective. And so what I've asked is a couple of individuals who have stepped forward, Tom McMacken, who we all know, Bill Siegel, who we all know, Dave Johnston, former mayor of Winter Park, and John Karen, who's a former president of Olive Garden, is also on multiple boards throughout the region. And I've also asked Steve Malden, who's the president and CEO of CNL Lifestyle Properties and CNL Healthcare Properties, who also served as the chair of, I'm going to screw this one up a little bit, but I believe it was the Downtown Economic Development Board when they merged with the Chamber of Commerce down there. So I've asked them if they would all be interested in serving on a task force, and they all heartily agreed and said they'd like the opportunity to take that forward and really kind of take us to the next step on this. And if they come forward and say, doesn't make business sense, then at least we'll be done with it. Or if they come forward and say, here's some of the other things you need to look into, we can do that. But I feel like we've been talking about it long enough, and if we started with this project a decade ago, we would probably have a backbone already built to the city that people could be utilizing. So
can I clarify something?
Certainly.
When you say we would be putting together this task force, which I do support, mm-hmm. what is the goal of the task force?
The goal is to come forward with a recommendation to the City Commission as to whether or not we should proceed with taking the next steps and really getting hard costs on a fiber network backbone.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, could I?
Certainly.
Could I suggest that perhaps at this stage in the development of the industry and the technology that we have the task force focus on alternative approaches for the city to address broadband?
I think that's a great suggestion.
I like that.
Instead of simply the fiber optic backbones?
Yeah.
Mr. Weldon, I'm happy to. That would be included in my motion that they investigate as well, fiber optic or some type of high-speed backbone for the city. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay. Yes, I don't.
From a staff perspective, who would we expect on the city staff to be? Would that be the IT folks?
I would have my proposal would be to have Parsram and anybody from his group okay. involved, since they've already done the legwork on it.
And then I guess the other side of that is it's almost, we have the Utility Advisory Board, which does the electric, the water, sewer, that, this could somewhat tie into some of those other disciplines, if you will. So as almost this committee could coordinate and maybe attend some of the Utility Advisory Board meetings,
can I offer this? Who is the utility liaison?
Troy.
And Dave.
And David.
So I'm happy to ask that they be involved in this as well. I think you would be anyway, but if that makes it, if that handles that for you?
That's why I'm just trying to think through how the process
sure.
itself would work, because if, there's been a lot of talk of coupling that with the undergrounding program.
Well, as a senior task force, these guys will also have sunshine, and they'll be keeping these open meetings, too, so anybody that wants to get involved in city staff, and certainly Randy can appoint other people from city that he thinks may be affected by it.
Okay. And then kind of time frame? Are you thinking 6 months, 12 months?
Yeah, I'm hopefully, months? I mean, I think we seat them, Randy,
as a 6 months.
I think they sunset after 6 months, so I'm hoping that they'll come. I'm expecting something earlier than that. A lot of the work's okay. already been done, but from a sunset standpoint, it's a six-month sunset.
Okay, and then would we have the opportunity when people hear about this, if they want to get involved, that they could be appointed to the board as well?
I'd like to keep the board focused, but they mm-hmm. can certainly attend all the meetings, and depending upon what the meeting's about, there's probably opportunities for input.
Okay.
But that wasn't actually on our agenda tonight, right? You're just talking about whether we place it on the agenda for the board?
No, I'm actually bringing, because, again, the discussion of fiber was on here, and I wasn't sure I wanted to really move forward with the board, but I'd like to make that board appointment now. I don't see the need to wait. We have five people who are willing to step forward.
Well, typically, we would allow people to submit applications for boards. I mean, there may be other people who are very well qualified and interested. That was my only concern.
It's not really
well,
a board, is
task
it?
Force.
It's a task force.
Yeah, and those appointments are still yeah. mine to make. So I think these gentlemen have tremendous records, and each have bring something different to the table, given former county commissioner, former city commissioner, former mayor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there's no one's arguing
there's
with
nothing
folks. We're just is there some guy out there that's been doing this for 10 years and he knows it inside and out and he wants to be on the board, and we're saying, no, that guy can't be on the board because we already have a board.
They can certainly
and
be.
And it's like, if that person's out there
if
and
that
they're doing this,
forward,
it would be nice to have him on the board.
We can certainly look to appoint again, but I'd like to at least get this thing off the ground.
Yeah.
I've been waiting too long for it.
And I think we have to really be careful about calling it a task force, not a board. It's something you're just putting together with
this
specific goal and this six-month period of time. It's not something that's going to involve all of the things
that's
the board involves.
I would like to see the. I have no problem approving it tonight, Mr. Mayor, but I would like to see I presume we are still going to have to approve a formal document establishing the task force.
And a scope of.
Not necessarily. I mean, we can do it.
The commission can set it. It's not a board.
Yep.
So you have the flexibility to establish the purpose and scope of that task force action.
Mr. Mayor, could you read the purpose of the board to us again?
Sure. Let me try to scribble through my notes here, guys. I'm asking the city commission, or I'm asking the board to provide the city commission with the insight to determine if an investment towards this type of initiative to include a wireless or any other broadband alternative will be a benefit to current and potential residents and businesses.
But we added Peter's language.
That was
well, that's
his.
Yeah, I think it's in there. I think You know, the answer to that question is already yes. The question is, what does it cost and how do we execute it? You know,
so I'm expecting them to. I don't think they can provide a recommendation saying it makes financial sense without bringing those costs to us and how to fund them.
I'm certainly happy to pursue it.
We can adjust as it goes on, too.
Right, and I would maybe suggest that they come up with some options as to not one recommended,
that's
but maybe
scary.
There's two or three different recommended strategies for discussion and debate.
I agree.
We need to understand that before they move on to the next.
Like, so after, right.
Well, where is Parsham here? I don't see him. I see Sujay, but they came up, there was a recommendation, I think they came forward with three different or four different private partner, public partnerships. Mm-hmm. There was a couple different alternatives. I expect them to kind of flush those all out.
Okay.
With that, I will move that task force.
I'll second.
Okay. I will open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item, please step forward. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Okay. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. City Manager, Mr. Knight.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'm sorry, Randy, may I take a step back? I'll also say that Mr. Knight and I are heading up to Tallahassee early next week, tentatively. Have we booked everything, Randy?
Yes.
To meet with our legislators to discuss some of the items that seem to be of major importance this year specifically seem to infringe upon some of the issues that we take on at the city level. So we will be going, I believe, Monday night, or are we going on Monday morning?
Monday morning. We got meetings Monday afternoon
and Tuesday.
Okay.
So we'll be up there for that.
Mr. Mayor, are we going to have a resolution for the Florida League of Cities to support our objection to some of the legislation that is being proposed this year in the state legislature?
I don't know if one's being, has one been brought forth as a recommended language?
Not yet, but they will.
Okay.
And we have a meeting. We're hosting it on Thursday this week.
It's a Tri-City League, yes.
Oh, that's Tri-City, right.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was thinking of it from the standpoint of, I don't think there's any reason for us to be timid with our local residents about this issue. I think it's a very important issue for the city. And I would like to, make sure that the residents are brought up to speed on what the state legislature is considering, and perhaps offer their thoughts to the legislators as well.
So why don't we do this, Randy? When we come back, can we schedule some time on the agenda to review publicly the items of greatest importance to our community that the legislators are taking up in Tallahassee?
There's 70 something.
I know.
There
are only a couple that are. There's about four that are incredibly interesting.
Well, the home rule is certainly important. Right. And then if you read Mayor Dyer's letter in the paper last week, you saw that that's very important.
Utilities or CRA, there's a bunch of things.
Yeah. So we need to be aware.
Did we read the roll on the board? I think we got distracted.
We did. Yeah.
You did take that on the secondary board on the task force? Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We did it. Okay. Great. Mr. City Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir.
Commission. One of the great things about my job is working with the great employees that we have, and tonight we're going to recognize some of them that have hit some milestone anniversaries. So they've been invited to be here. So if you're here and I read your name, please stand up and be recognized. But this is those celebrating their 20 years with the city, Morris Cannon, Murray Daniel, Brad Granger, Stephen Griffin, Dan Hagedorn, Karen Harden, Buddy Miller, Gregory Reed, Edwin Santos, Ray Walton, and Hilton Williamson.
20 years.
We got one here. So
congratulations.
Then our 25-year anniversary, Ed Bigley, Cindy Giles, Randy Knight, forgive by him, Todd Metters, Gary Mitchell, John Montgomery, Jim Routson, and Sean Smith. And they're all working hard. And then the 30-year anniversaries, Tracy Campbell, Eugene Farley, Delcia Margraf, Brenda Moody, and Gail Tinch. And then, believe it or not, we have some 35-year ones, Juanita Grant.
Yeah.
Earl Hoffman, Robert Roop, and Michael Stiff. That's all Mike. Imagine that, 35 years with the city, and Earl Hoffman and Juanita actually have more than that because they worked for General Water Works, and in 1981, the city purchased General Water Works and got their employees came along and worked for the city, and so they really have 4 or 5 more years on top of that 35. So,
congratulations.
So I just wanted to say thank you to all of them. And
it must be a good place to work.
It is a good place to work, and it is a good family to be a part of. So.
Randy never says one of the greatest pleasures he has is working with the city commission, but he does say
that is
you
a fact.
So congratulations and thank you all.
Thank you all.
Okay. Randy, is that all?
Just one other thing. I've been working with Mr. Arteman on setting up a foundation that would be to benefit the city. We've had some residents come forward, and they would like to contribute money towards some specific projects. We would like to do it to a nonprofit instead of directly to the city. So we talked with the city of Orlando. They've got several of these foundations that they use to facilitate donations like that. And it could be for the library, it could be for parks, you know, any of those type of things. But Mr. Arteman and I are working towards getting that set up, and it'll be coming back.
Quickly, I hope.
Yeah, yes. Quickly. So just want to let you know that in case you hear any rumblings about it.
Okay.
And that concludes my report. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Vice Mayor Sprinkle.
So I know that that's such a very particular line of work, and I know that's not something we've done in our city in the past. So again, I'm wondering if we need the expertise of some other people, maybe somebody that's been raising funds that make sure that we have everything together. So do we have other people we can call on to make sure as we put this foundation together that we've done everything we need to do?
Mayor, commissioners, I've spoken with the City of Orlando City Attorney Mae Ann Downs because they set up an overall charitable organization to do that. It was in place for them for Pulse, so it was very fortunate. They've got a great structure that's set up. They hired special counsel to do that and some special folks as well. I've spoken to that person as well, and to the extent that we need them, absolutely, so long as there's no conflict, which I don't think there would be, they're ready to help us. I think the longest part of this probably will be getting the Internal Revenue Service to give us our certification. I think that's where it's going to be, but we should have something back that I can, Randy and I can bring back to the commission by the next meeting. So it would be very helpful. It won't be in place and effective then because once you create the organization and the structure, that's easy to do. It's the harder part's getting the Internal Revenue Service to approve the 501c3 or whatever the special designation is.
Mr. Arteman, one point on this. If it's truly going to be a foundation, I know private foundations are obligated to distribute, I think, 5% of their net assets every year on some formula. If possible, I would hope that you know what we can set up doesn't require any distribution so that money can be accrued for long-term projects.
Right. My expectation is that it would not be that type of a foundation. It would be a charitable organization under the Internal Revenue Code to allow donors to get the tax deduction just as if they were giving money to the city, but it would provide some additional benefits. Some folks don't want to be known.
Right.
So that anonymity is important. That's an important part also. To have the city run it creates some public records and sunshine law issues. So the idea would be to create the entity so that we could maximize the donors' opportunities to give and get their deductions and achieve great goals for the city.
Fantastic.
That it would be for the city specifically, to benefit the city and its operations as well.
Mr. Seidel.
With regards to the donors being able to prescribe, are they going to be able to prescribe what the money goes for in great detail?
That's the idea.
Okay,
yes.
There'd be an umbrella.
What I'm getting at is there wouldn't be any real commission involvement. They would just say, here's what I'm giving the money for, and then we would get notified at the commission that, hey, this has happened. It's not like we have to approve anything, right? It's kind of, this is what
we have to be very cautious because if we go too far and have too much of a oversight position, it becomes a public entity. So the idea, I think, as far as I understand right now it's to not have a public entity, but to have a vehicle that would benefit the city. So the purpose of the organization would be for improvements and projects in the city and operations to the city, but the city likely would have some appointment powers with respect to that organization.
So we would appoint trustees.
Some members of that organization is the likely mechanism.
Okay. You said that Orlando was able to use it for Pulse.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's very much a general umbrella, and then within the...
They have a very interesting structure. They set it up a broad umbrella, and actually, instead of they were having each individual department create their own separate entity, which was a difficult thing. So they've set it up so that they've got an umbrella organization, Strengthen Orlando, Inc., I think. And then under that, they have different project committees and task committees that will key to different departments. So, and they've got an interesting structure as to how they've set it up that allows a close relationship, a very close relationship to the city, but apparently has been able to preserve the benefits to all the donors as to anonymity and their full deduction capability.
So anything that would normally require commission approval and public process would have to go through the public process.
Oh, certainly. This will not exclude them from that process.
So, for example, if someone gave money for the event center.
Or for the path on Denny.
A path on Denny. Spending that money on a city project, it would come to you as a revenue source then from the nonprofit. So you would see $100,000 coming in for the path on Denning, and so you'd still have to spend the money in that regard as part of your overall project.
And one of the problems, though, if someone to give money directly to the city rather than to a separate entity, creates you as a governmental entity have certain restrictions, and for you to commit how you can and cannot spend creates issues. The anonymity issue. There's a lot of things that would be in place with the separate charitable organization that would facilitate that giving.
So let's just say that there's a thousand ways to skin this thing, and all these questions are valid. But until really we have the outline in front of us,
right.
It's a little bit up for working through. Commissioner.
The only other thing I would say is the other end of that in anonymity, of course, are the people who are going to be looking for naming rights when they donate so much money to an entity. So I just think that we have to think all of that way through before we even start with it. And that's what I'm just want to make sure we have the best brains in that business, a very specific right. business looking toward. And I don't know that we want to necessarily use what Orlando did
exactly.
for that.
Take
maybe to get
apart.
It started, but then when it comes to the rest of it, we may want to look at some of the charitable people at Rollins or other places.
Yeah, we have Florida Hospital yeah. Town, we have Rollins, and yeah. I'd certainly like to engage, you know, anybody in our
Absolutely.
Community that can eyeball it and say, this is what we do.
I like that. So we'll pull from our city partners and those that are here as well as some folks outside the city. But I understand there's nothing that would prohibit anybody from giving a contribution to the city and still getting that full tax deduction. But we just want to maximize, and the city, I think, wants to maximize the flexibility and opportunities for folks to give. Some won't give if they're giving directly to a city.
Okay.
So,
I believe we're still, are we still with Mr. Knights? Yes.
You're asking questions. I'm right. done with my report.
Yeah. You're done with your report, right. But before we turn it over to the city attorney who piggybacked on that, that's okay. No, we wanted you to. Any questions for the city attorney? Or the city manager, I apologize. Okay, Mr. Artiman.
Yes, Mayor, just two items. On the library, we do not have an answer as of this afternoon from the panel of judges. I will actually, there's no procedure set in place in these appellate proceedings where you've got a panel to push the court. So the gentle questions, I think, are how we'll have to proceed at this point, but there's no reason the court cannot and could not have ruled for the last 2 weeks. All the filings have been done. We're just waiting on the panel. So we'll make...
Is there a time deadline?
No, ma'am. They can wait a long time. I do not expect them to. I'll have some inquiries this week, but I can't file a motion and say, court, you have to rule. I think Sarah understands that better than I do. Secondly, with respect to the drone ordinance, I did send the drone ordinance around. If you have comments or questions, please let me know. We would like to get a version of this to the FAA's General Regional Council for their feedback. So if you have any questions, just let me know.
I have a question for you, Mr. Arnold.
Yes, sir.
Regarding that, we've talked in the past, and we believe that there may be something coming down from the state.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Are we, I don't want to say wasting time, but are we, right. Can time be spent better elsewhere rather than if yeah. if they issue anything in the preempts, whatever we adopt?
What I've heard, and you all may have heard as well, because there are so many different ordinances all over the state, there's a push to have a preemptive bill or a bill that would preempt local government regulation of drones. It may pass. So I think a lot of focus on the House Bill 17 that's attempting to deprive cities of home rule power and some of the other bills that are attempting to take away your power. And other city and county's power across the state would be well spent between now. And if it doesn't, if there is no preemption bill for the drone ordinance, then we can visit that.
Well, I think we're pleased with preemption when we ask for preemption. But and in this case, that may actually solve our issue for us.
For drones, correct.
So what are you suggesting?
I'm not suggesting anything now. I just know that there is something in the works at the state, and I'm wondering if we're spending.
I really do not want to wait on the state to make this decision for us. I would much rather us move on it. I don't know why we would wait on the state of Florida in their 60 days of work up there to come up with something. I've been there too many times. I would tell you we should make the decision.
Do you see a drastic need to impose an ordinance?
Well, I think that we've had enough people. Some of them sitting right up here who have been concerned, and we certainly have had residents.
I've had three residents contact me about drones that made them very uncomfortable at their homes observing them, and they were quite uncomfortable.
So we'll continue on.
What we could do is bring it back for a first reading at the next city commission meeting if the city manager sees fit.
Okay.
What about if we see fit? I
didn't mean to free.
I don't want to
take over the agenda. So if you guys want to have it next meeting, that's fine.
City manager controls the agenda, right. So I believe that was his comment.
We'll have it.
If we would like to see it brought forward, we can certainly ask for three to bring it to the next commission meeting.
Yeah.
Well, you have one.
You've got two.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be three.
Okay. Great. Randy, would you please?
Randy, I'm sorry. It's coming back.
Okay. Any questions for the city attorney?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Randy, we're going to hear item 7 now prior to reconvening as the CRA.
And I just want to remind you, on our 5 o'clock, we're losing our person on the...
I apologize. You're right. We are dealing with item 10 now. I moved that forward, too, at the beginning of the agenda. So who is going to be bringing that forward?
I'm going to start it. And then we have from Pizzuti several members of their team here to get into any specifics when it comes to the cost of the project. But I've teed up 4 items for you for some general policy discussion, first of which is, we are at least a year behind now, given the litigation and the other stuff we've been through. We've only taken bookings at the Civic Center through the end of April, and so it's going to be at least a year before we have a design and construction documents and all of that.
So can I ask you a question? When's our busy season?
Well, it's normally summertime weddings and holidays. Christmas holidays. So.
So if we extend this through the Christmas holiday, are we still going to be okay from a, you feel comfortable?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you all okay with
that?
I'm okay with that. So say January 31st. We'll take it to January 31st for now. We can always adjust that as time sees fit.
Okay, January 31st.
Yep. Are you guys okay with that?
Sure. That no construction would commence before January 31st. That's what we're saying.
Unless we subsequently change our mind.
Right.
Well, you're going to be booking it for people, and those are contractual.
We'll say we're booking the event center. Well, we're booking the Civic Center up and through January 31st, and there will be no major construction to impact any of those.
Well, you don't want to clear the green spaces or do anything like that.
So I said, there's going to be nothing that's going to affect any of those that are booked.
All right. Second item is, and we got plenty of time to talk about this now that you've extended it, but some type of closing event where we would, certainly invite people back that have had events there that, as a celebration of what that building has done for the community over the last 40 years.
So let's deal with that as we get a little bit closer to it, if you don't mind.
And then, as I mentioned, Pizzuti is here to talk about the project price. The ACI report, as you recall.
Randy, would you mind if we skip to the selling bonds?
Certainly.
I think the next item you were going to talk about is going to take a little bit longer discussion. So
yeah.
Regarding the selling the items, can you so selling the bonds?
We've received some interest from a few community members in a local sale of the bond so that they would have an opportunity to buy library bonds in support of their community. I've got mixed emotions about it. From my standpoint, we normally do our bonds on a competitive sale, which means we put it out to bid, the different underwriters bid interest rates, and we pick the one that's in the best interest of the city financially.
Mm-hmm.
Then they turn around and sell those bonds to their customers, and you know, they already have typically, or institutions, that type of thing. There is an option of doing a negotiated sale where we would pick the underwriter and then work with them to create a, you know, 3-day period or 1-day period, whatever, that locals could buy the bonds first before they go to their regular customers. My preference is to stick with competitive sale, but if we believe there's enough community interest and you want to do a negotiated sale, that's certainly doable. Competitive sales allow you to time the market a little better, but you're not getting that. I mean, not a negotiated sale allows you to time the market a little better, but a competitive sale, you know, is more above board, you know, from a bidding and out standpoint.
Questions for the city manager?
Can you bid it out with that as part of the criteria?
We could try. The challenge is they don't know how much local take there would be and how to factor that interest rate in.
Because it seems to me that it would be a wonderful way to create community ownership in a spirit. You know, that's the positive side of it. If it costs us more, that's the negative side.
Yeah.
I personally think it's a great idea if it's something that can be done without it being unduly expensive for us. I don't want to do that.
You're speaking specifically of offering the bonds to a local market.
To actually try to compete it with a provision that if that's possible.
So then that would you're favoring the negotiated sales approach, which would allow us a little bit more opportunity?
I don't normally. I'm a big competitive sale person, but the library.
Is there a middle ground possibly where we set aside, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million with the underwriters and we make it available to the public at the blended bid rate for the balance of the bonds, and they have to, you know, make their deposit? All this is done routinely.
Yeah, I'd be glad
to. Public offerings and stuff.
Get our financial advisor to look at that. And
would you? I hate to penalize the. Yeah. Listen, I would love the opportunity to offer up the bonds individually to residents and business, any stakeholders in the city that like to purchase them. But at the same time, if it negatively affects our numbers, our rates, I don't think that's in the best interest of the city.
I'd like to do a competitive bid with the possibility of working with our consultants on the bond placement side of things to see if there's a way that we could hold back a certain amount under, you know, certain circumstances so that the bidders would know that, you know, they're going to have to take between X and Y, and that would be determined based upon how many deposits the city has received prior to the bid date, and the local residents would be assured of getting a blended competitive rate on their share of the bonds.
Okay.
Is that okay? Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense to investigate.
I don't know if it could be done either, but
sure.
You know, try to find a way to eat my apple and have my pie at the same time.
Sure,
something like
you're making me hungry. That's your idea.
Yeah, Randy, could you just explain to me the enthusiasm behind local bonds? Is it to just say I've got a bond from the library, or is it to make money off the bonds from the library and keep the money local?
It's a way of showing community support that you're buying the local bonds. And some, you know, in some cases, people have been willing to take a lower interest rate in order to own a project, a bond of a project they're
So are we
excited about?
Are we talking $1 million? Are we talking $5 million?
You know, we've gotten phone calls, and I know Sean's gotten some phone calls. Yeah. I don't think anybody said, I've got $2 million, I want to buy bonds. You know, we haven't gotten.
Because they could buy some rooms for $2 million. They can put their names on the room.
The other school of thought, well, the other school of thought is that if you offer this opportunity for community support, that rather than donate, they might.
You could possibly make
they might buy bonds and think they're doing their part.
Right.
You know, so. Especially if you set aside something that gives them that reward. So I think we investigate, but.
Well, I think what would be interesting is just to have, like, just for example, get the children involved, and you have these, you know, $2 bonds that they could be a part of the library.
Just I'll issue those personally.
What's that?
I'll issue those personally.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just that, you know, because you're kind of when you're talking about this, it's showing how the process works, so they understand. I remember when I got my Disney stocks when I was a kid; that was a big deal, and you understood what stock, and you'd watch it and watch how it would go.
We'll give them a library card. I also don't want to have it, right?
Guys. I don't want to unduly burden staff, our bond council, as well as the citizens of Winter Park, who may be picking up the difference.
Yes.
So, Randy, I think you've heard the request. Are you okay with investigating that a little bit further?
Yes, sir.
Great. Item three that you were going to.
All right. So on the project price, you know, the ACI report, it's been a year ago now, set the price at $32.5 million, which we based our $30 million bond question on, and there was a $2.5 million challenge to the library to raise that. There's been talk by the commission and the CRA agency of potential CRA funds going towards the project. When
the
we
parking garage is that what?
Yeah, and the parking garage is part of the $32.5 million, but that was based on a 200-car parking garage, a two-level parking garage, and there's some talk about whether do we need additional parking to accommodate the shortfall of parking we have for the playing fields today. All those issues come into play as we move forward, and we're negotiating our final contract with Hunt and Brady, the architect. Pizzuti's doing those negotiations on our behalf. And as I say in here, we've got a year behind now. Construction costs have gone up in that year as the economy started booming. We've spent roughly $500,000 on attorney fees and consulting fees and all of those type of costs leading up to this point. And so we want to talk about where we set that price moving forward. And this, I'd be glad to answer any question about that. I'm going to ask Jim to step forward.
Randy, can I ask a question before we move forward on that?
Sure.
So when you're talking the 32.5, okay, there's the actual construction cost, there's the engineering cost, there's the overseeing cost. So when you say 32.5,
all in.
That's construction, soft cost, everything.
Okay.
Furnished FF&E, I mean, it's all in
okay,
that 32.5.
If you recall, it was 25 originally, and we added 5 as a buffer, and that got it up to 30.
No, the project as presented by the task force and ACI was 32.5. Now, the construction, if you just look at the it was 25 when it was just a library.
You don't want me to go
and
there.
Remember the commission added.
I remember, sir.
Yeah, no, I asked for, right, it's 25, and then there was concerns about the stormwater and stuff, and I suggested we add an additional $5 million to cover ourselves for things that may come up. And that's how I recall it.
No.
That's not correct.
The ACI report was a $32.5 million project. It does have a contingency in there, not a $5 million contingency, but it has a contingency.
15% of that.
Okay, let's hold on. We have a gentleman here at the podium to speak and kind of clarify some things for us. Sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and Commission. First, we're very excited to be here and continue.
Sorry, would you identify yourself for the record? My
name is Jim Russell, Executive Vice President for the Pizzuti Companies.
Thanks, Jim.
Part of our initial work on behalf of the city is to review the original ACI budget, and to the city manager's comments, what we're looking at right now are basically two additional costs, or two costs that you need to be concerned about to make sure you can deliver the program that you right now have planned. And that is the escalation that you're looking at in construction. That original budget was completed the end of October 2015, and so part of what our job would do, what we did, was to estimate the construction to the midpoint of construction, or escalate the cost of construction to the midpoint of construction. And to that number, you really have an increase in your total hard construction cost.
So what year did you use?
That would be to the middle of 2019, approximately. So we estimated those costs 4% a year per year to that point. And that's just to allow for the coverage and the full buyout of the project, and then it would finish completion of construction. And that's a typical process that we do on all of our projects. The secondary cost is the additional cost, as the city manager had mentioned, related to the litigation and that time frame, which really takes away some of your buying power if it is to be reimbursed out of the same bond package. And so at this point, what we're trying to do is to make sure we know the maximum number that we're dealing with on your behalf to manage, understanding that through this entire process, it does not stop us or minimize our efforts to do value engineering, to tweak the program. That is part of our next step, is to validate the program once the architects are under contract. So we continue to deliver that project much lower. We just want to make sure that at this point, from a cost standpoint, the longer that you wait to issue the bonds, the potential increase in cost that you'll have, the interest rates on the bonds, and the construction costs will continue to rise as well. So we want to make sure that from a public standpoint, the expectation is set, the budget is established, and we know how much that we're dealing with from a bonding capacity.
Thank you. Randy, question on that, the bonding capacity. What is it for per $5 million for the, we came up with a number for every $5 million, every additional million that we bonded. What was that, what did that translate to for I think we had a home value to $300,000. Remember we worked some math. Do you recall those numbers? Because I want people to realize the difference between if we go forward with a $25 million bonding versus $30 million, what that costs on it, or what that means to an individual homeowner or a typical homeowner.
The millage rate for the $30 million was 0.49?
A little under half a mil.
Yeah, 4.9, I think.
All right, so if you call it a half a mil just for easy math, right. it's about 0.05 mils for every $5 million, no, 30 million divided by six, so just under one mil, just under one tenth of a mil per $5 million.
Okay. If we could see that broken down just a little bit before we make the final determination on what exactly we're going to move forward with bonding, I think that would be helpful.
Well, my understanding was that the actual design was not going to happen until now.
That's correct.
To me that designing to a cost would make sense.
That's absolutely right.
As opposed to, there were just a couple of numbers that I had questions about, if you don't think that's getting in the weeds too much, but there were a couple of numbers that were very different from the preliminary budget. And one of them was the earthwork, utilities, and landscape. That went from 800,000 to 2 million. So that was a huge jump. Then there was architectural and engineering fees that went from 1.4 million to 1.9 million. And there were only three. There were only three items that had significant differences, but I was just trying to, if you could help me understand if something changed about those particular ones, because that's a couple million dollars.
Right, and right now, so you know, we're in the program validation stage, and then we have the original construction estimates that Warden Smith Dunn had completed as part of the ACI study. We don't have the detail behind that. We've made a request so we can line those costs
there
up a little bit more in detail.
All of them looked to be just escalation until I got to those three.
Right, and one of the things, just to kind of keep it in perspective to that original budget, right now we've completed many libraries. In our last probably nine libraries, the per square foot cost of those were delivered somewhere around $300 a square foot, which would put at your project a hard construction cost of about $15 million if you were starting preliminary budgeting today. The ACI budget that was done in partnership with Warden Smith, those hard costs were somewhere about $12.5 million. So you do have, you had a very tight budget as part of that initial proposal, regardless of where you are ending up today. So I think we just want to make sure that we understand what you have to spend, what the desire is. But again, our work is to continue to provide you options to reduce those costs, maybe share some of that square footage once you are into design, because quite frankly, all these estimates are based on best guesses. We don't have designs to price yet, and so they will continue to hopefully come down as you're advancing. the timing of the bond issue, normally it's be, we would complete a lot of that work, we would advance the design, sure, and then be able to have hard prices. It's just, you know, we're potentially facing some increases in your costs, and I think that's what the city manager and staff is trying to protect you from those overruns. They have nothing to do with the project.
Mr. Weldon, did you have a... No, I'm trying to figure out why we're discussing this. That's fair. That's a fair question.
As part of the negotiation with the architect on what they're designing, right, to, but, I mean,
well, right. Well, are we saying that we are going to, that someone would like us to consider spending more than $32.5 million?
No,
I think it's the other way in adjusting the scope of the project.
I'm trying to keep you at $32.5 million.
Well, thank you, Randy.
And not less than that.
Yeah. So what action are you thinking is appropriate at this stage, Mr. City Manager?
I would love for you to approve the project moving forward with the architect at the $32.5 million number.
And right now it's responsible. What?
Well,
it's at 30, right?
It's at 30.
Including 2.5.
Including
our approval is at 30.
That's correct. That's correct.
Is it 27.5?
That's correct.
Okay. Just want to clarify where we are for everybody.
Yeah, and part of our recommendation would be to add to that is if you were to get the face value of the $30 million to potentially issue those at premium, so you would have $30 million available for the library development plus the additional 2.5 that the library would raise. Right. That's your best management practice to advance the project, not to exceed it, but to make sure that we...
My view is that we're going to do the best possible job we can with the money that the citizens have approved.
Authorized, yes.
And my expectation is also that in the management of the project, that once the designs are finalized to the point where they can be bid, there will be competitive bids on all the major elements, and that the appropriate people will make the trade-offs as to which contractor offers the best value proposition, not just price proposition, and we'll end up with a number at some point in time based upon the design. Now, the architect, certainly we can't negotiate directly with the architect, I guess. You know, we can't. But certainly they have to be sensitive to the realities that we're going to face. And I think it's fair to say that we want the best possible result within what the citizens have authorized. So I don't have any problem reiterating what the citizens authorized.
Okay. Well, Vice Mayor Sprinkle, I'm sorry.
Okay, so I was sitting at this same table when we had this very same discussion about whether we were looking at a building to be $30 million or $32.5 million. And it seems to me like, unless I've completely lost my memory, that we all agreed at that time that it was a $30 million all-in project, that the 32.5 was not what we were looking at. So am I not remembering
you
that correctly?
You are 100% accurate.
Okay, so I do remember that correctly. I don't think there was any real action on that, but I do know that I'm not interested in going over $30 million by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I was the one who wanted to go to $25
million. Right.
Okay, so I really want us to think about the fact that we've already had this discussion, and $30 million was what we decided. So we're just bringing it back, I guess, with hope somebody's going to change their mind.
I have no problem, Sarah, sticking with what the commission previously agreed when I wasn't on it. I have no problem sticking with that now, because the reality is going to hit us in the face when the thing's designed. And at that point, we may be in a position where we have to make design trade-offs for economic purposes. I certainly hope not. And I certainly hope that the architects and designers are highly sensitive to this issue before they bring us a design.
I think if they're not, then we'll help with that too.
I have Mr. Seidel next.
Thanks. What I'm trying to understand, just it seems the purpose is to talk about an overall budget, but is there some underlying factors here we're dealing with the timing of getting the bonds approved, and we're dealing with whether or not we're actually going to be able to go under construction? Like, we're hearing the time frame still kind of out there. So is it, you know, to me, yes, I know construction costs are going up. That's what I've been telling everybody. Is it something where we want to try and get this going, and there's some risk in getting the architects on board and those other folks? We need to weigh those risks for an overall schedule? Or is this meeting just to decide, for your negotiation purposes, how much building we want to pay for right now, which is depending on the schedule, with construction costs.
In order for them to take the next step, they need a decision on what they believe the overall budget to be, correct?
Yeah, typically the architects, their fee is based on the hard cost, hard construction cost. So that's really generally part of their fee approach, and then we work within what gets delivered within that scope. So that is certainly a part of it. I think from our perspective, just to be clear, we don't think you're in any danger from a construction standpoint and a schedule standpoint. You could be advancing the project utilizing general dollars and pay yourself back. It's really more a financial issue that you want to be prepared for when those bonds would be issued, so you're not actually paying more for the project than what you originally had budgeted because your costs are higher on the bond sale. You know, we'll deliver the project at whatever level it is set at.
Do we expect bond rates to go up again?
Yes. They're going to go up by the end of the week. But, you know, so, and
right.
We're talking possibly two more increases before the end of the year. So that is an issue. And then when we issue those bonds, I mean, that's when the real decision
right.
is made on,
right.
on what the overall project is.
Because
if we issue a $27.5 million bond issue, then, then we either... If it comes to Commissioner Weldon's point, if it comes in later and we decide we wanted to add that extra floor to the garage or we want this feature in the building that, you know, costs extra,
right.
then maybe we'll use CRA funds or something else to make up the difference. But at that point, you've issued the bonds and you can't go back and issue more.
Okay. Commissioner Cooper.
I have a slightly different view of this, and that's only because we were all sitting here when we published a city news, and Ken Bradley very clearly said our city's initial investment is going to be $15 million, and that went out in city news to the residents. Then they came and they voted on a $30 million bond. So for me, I don't see a pot for the CRA and a pot for the library and a pot for the city. Mm-hmm. I see a commitment to a $30 million library. And that's where my comfort, and that's the not to exceed is the $30 million library for me.
Including the library's contribution?
Including. Only because I didn't ever make that differentiation that there's yours, mine, and ours,
and
us.
I have no problem agreeing with that.
I think that we've actually had some times up here where we have alluded to other ways we might be able to get some more funding into that $30 million pot. We have not, as a commission, actually talked about that. For
right.
instance, if there was a sale of a piece of property like Progress Point, could any of that funding go into this? We haven't talked about that yet as a commission, but we have alluded to the fact that there are other ways out there. So I'm in full agreement with you that we keep the $30 million number in place, and that we go forward sooner rather than later on the bonding. I don't know that I'm in agreement with anybody, because I don't know anybody said this but me, and that we do that with great haste so that we are not holding up any project. And at the same time, we eventually, team, have to figure this out. Is there someplace else we can go for more money?
So I will tell you this. I have no interest whatsoever in adding additional general fund dollars to this project. The citizens, by a slim margin, approved $30 million, and I think we hold to that. I think going back and adding additional dollars to this, it's still taxpayer dollars, even though it's sitting in reserve, and I don't see that that's justifiable. So I said I'm fine with a hard number at $30 million, and I'm fine to start there.
It's generous.
Mr. Mayor, I would add to your comment there that I also would not be willing to spend more general fund dollars of any sort. However, I would not be adverse to continuing to discuss the participation of the CRA in the parking structure as an opportunity to lower the bond obligations of the citizens, not to increase the total cost of the project.
Thank you. That's where I'm at.
Well, and that's something we're going to have to take up as a CRA board.
And we're going to have to take that up before we get serious about issuing the bonds.
Correct, Randy?
Yes, sir.
Randy, tell me what you need.
I think I've heard at least three say the $30 million is the hard cap.
Okay, Mr. Seidel.
Yeah, no, I just, from a design perspective, you know, one of the things we're not talking about is if there's donors that want to make this a better project. So are we able to, with the architect, develop the schemes up front, here's what we can get for what our budget is. And then if you wanted to add a few optional features, and then if folks that want to donate can pay for those optional features, is that part of what you guys can do, or are you just looking at this as we're going to come back with one design and it's going to meet the cost, or are we going to go through an option process to say, here's your building options, here's what we can do, and this is where we're at? So,
Typically, it can be a bit of a challenge for the architect to produce multiple conceptual drawings, sure. Especially because if you were managing to a budget, there's only so much work that they can put
right.
forward. What we would do on your behalf as part of those initial concept design, we will work with them to vet where those costs are coming in. And so if there are some features that are above where this project would be, you know, we can look at pricing what that option would be, have them work to get it within budget, and then show, hey, here's some additional work. So we wouldn't want to encourage them to over-design, but rather if we thought that design was above, we could price that and then give some options to you. But for the most part, we're going to just manage to the number. And if I could, just for clarification, because I've heard a couple things, and forgive us because we're the new kids on the block for this project. You know, we understand the vote that the residents have made for the $30 million bond issue. We also have been told about the additional $2.5 million that the folks would be raising, that the library would be part of raising. So is it a 32
no.
plus million, or is it 30 and the library is not expected to raise additional no. dollars, or is that?
If they're expected, then that's just good.
No, but that's the exact question. Is that good? I mean, I think
yes. If you go to,
I can't make a commitment for the library board here. So you have a commitment from the city for $30 million. Okay, so this is based on I think what we're saying up here from the referendum, $30 million. If the library board wants to commit another 2.5 or 10.
No. That's not what we're
going. I want a $30 million event center and library and parking garage. And if anybody wants to donate to this, more power to them. Yep. We would be happy to take it.
How do you bond that?
You don't bond that. Okay,
If we're going to bond $30 million, we're bonding $30 million. Right. We can't go back halfway through the bonding process or once it's been bonded and pay back $2.5 million in bonds. It's just not the way the market works.
Well.
So we either bond a number and stick to that number, and if anything comes in incremental to that, then that's an addition to the project.
I think
am I wrong, Randy? I'm sorry. Let me just get city managers.
First of all, the way Commissioner Sprinkle just said it is what I thought I heard y'all saying, that basically we'd be issuing $27.5 million of bonds, right. And the library's got to make the delta up to $30 million. I mean, the risk is they don't meet their fundraising goal, and we've only issued $27.5 million of bonds.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, we could issue additional bonds to meet the need to finish the job.
Not unless you go through another process.
So you're saying we're going to do all the bonds at once? That's what I'm hearing? Why don't we be doing $30 million? And why can't you prepay? Can you put it out there that we're allowed to prepay when the project's done?
You're going to get a different rate.
You're going to pay a penalty if you can prepay some. But that is an option that you would take, you know, $3 million of it and say, we're going to issue this as variable rate debt that we can pay back at any time. And the other 27 as a fixed.
Well, that seems
if you do something like that to give you some flexibility and pay
risk.
It back if you raise the other money.
So let me do this on this item, Randy, because I think that we're still there's some confusion on how it's going to be marketed, how the bonds are going to be sold. So would you all mind a little session on that? I don't want to hold up. We have a number of other things on this to discuss. So I don't know if we're at that place to make a decision.
I'd be happy to get more feedback from
Randy,
the library.
What do you need from a time perspective? I want to make sure Mr. Russell gets what he needs as well, but I want to make sure that we're not overcommitting or undercommitting.
Well, it was our plan to try to bring the architect contract back at the next meeting, but I mean, if it's a month from now instead of the next meeting, that's
Okay, folks. Well, all we need is three. So I will take.
Why we're not able to make our decision.
We can make our decision, Commissioner.
I think we're missing some piece of information, and that's, can we define what it is that we're missing so that we can get to the end?
I'm not prepared to make, to get additional two here. But I'm happy if someone else wants to try to articulate how to move forward here,
Well, I could suggest, given the, you know, the nature of the negotiation, I think it's wholly appropriate, it would be wholly appropriate in my view, for the representatives of the city to go back to the architect and say, the city commission has authorized
$30 million.
$27.5 million, with an understanding that the library board is working hard to meet their shared commitment of $2.5 million, bringing the total budget potentially to $30 million.
With a 27.5 bond.
With a 27.5 bond. I think that's a fair way to present it.
Which includes all the design fees and all.
Everything, all in, all in.
Okay.
Total project.
Can you enlarge that to and say the library board or other donors to make up the additional?
Well, it's not additional. It's whatever they're.
It's not additional. It's whatever. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is 27.5 bond right. For a total 30, and the 30 has to be raised elsewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I support
that. Is that enough information for you, Mr. Russell, to move forward?
Yes, it is.
I'll move that.
Okay. I'll second.
I'll third it.
Okay. Well, we have three. Since this is really, Randy, do we need to take a vote on this, Mr. Artiman? I don't know if we need to take a vote on it. We're just kind of giving direction.
I think it's just direction. There's no action.
That's true.
But it may be appropriate to hear what consequence that action, if he does that, will have.
About $2.5 million less than that. I mean, quite frankly, that's what it is. And so that would be part of
he would design them to a $27.5 million.
Yes.
Well, I'll just simply remind that the, and I've not wanted to go to that number, but the residents did authorize $30 million. Mm-hmm. And hence the additional coming from additional funds. So, but if that's the wish of the commission, then that's what we're moving forward with.
Yeah, and part of it, as the project's moving forward and we're moving through schematic design and into design development, you'll see the impact of the reductions as necessary. And right. At that point, you know, you can continue to take action as a commission to do what you want to do. But we're going to use the $30 million as
the number. Mr. Russell, thank you very much. We appreciate you walking us through this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Randy, when would we expect to be advertising those bonds? When would they hit the market then?
I don't know.
Randy, would you bring us back an updated timeline?
Yes, sir.
Specifically as it relates to financing?
Yes, sir.
And what it looks like from a perspective numbers from the bond market?
Yes, sir.
I haven't kept up with it, so I'd just like to see where we are.
Yeah. And then is all that contingent on the court proceedings ending?
Yes, that's been my hesitation to do anything hard cost until we know that's resolved.
Right.
And so that's why we hadn't pulled the trigger yet on the architect contract.
So far, that's cost the citizens close to probably over $1 million in financing those lawsuits. So that's great work. Okay, we have number 6A. I moved item 7. I moved item 7 up prior to us adjourning and reconvening. So can we take a look at the SunRail statistics? Who is handling that?
Troy.
Not yet. No, we're going to do. We're going to do this, then we'll reconvene as a CRA.
All right.
Okay. In your packet, and Patrick's going to pull it up on the screen. But in your packet was basically a one-sheeter that gave ridership numbers from inception to the present, and you can see that our numbers are somewhere in the 400-420 riders per day. That's on and off at the Winter Park station. You can see there's also a pie chart. Scroll down a little bit, Patrick. Scroll down a little bit more. There's a pie chart that shows how we rank with all of the other stations. Right now, we're on equal with about Sand Lake Road at about 12% of the riders. Now, just going back to history, when this thing was first initiated, first thought of, we were going to have 7% of the ridership. That was with 17 stations. Right now, there's only 12 stations that are constructed. And you know that the costs are proportionately assigned based on ridership. The good thing is we have a cap. $350,000 is is our annual.
Is that where we ended up?
Is our annual cap.
Is something with liability?
Yes.
Troy, were you able to break down the riderships from origination and destination? I know it's total ridership per station.
I was not, no.
Is there any way to capture that?
If they're even able to do that.
Good to know that.
Caroline, do you know if there's any way to capture that?
You're asking if.
We can figure out who's originating and who's departing on stars.
It's about half and half.
Really? Okay.
DeBary and Sand Lake, same thing.
See, all they can do is boardings versus, you know, disembarking. Right. And obviously, if you ride it here, you're getting counted once when you get off and once when you get back on to go home. So they don't have it broken out to whether it was actually the destination or you boarded here first and then came back.
So maybe we're the only place people are going.
Right.
So ours should be free.
You're starting here or leaving here.
The other interesting point is our Friday numbers are significantly higher than our Monday through Thursday numbers on a daily average. And then the weekend numbers are double what we see during the week, like the Saturday service.
So it's recreation, not.
So we know that we're a destination point more so than an origination point.
Right.
Okay. And are they able to break down, are the, Carol, I know it's not fair to put you on the spot here, you're not here to discuss this. Do you know, then I'll ask Troy, are we able to capture from the purchase of those cards where people are purchasing from? So if somebody.
I'm not exactly sure. Okay. I'll have to do some research on that.
And again, my, you know, I think the assumption is that we're much higher a destination than we are origination, which is phenomenal for our businesses, but it you know, we also want to be able to provide an origination point for our residents to go elsewhere. But if they're not using it, I'd certainly like to know that number too if we can. And I don't know how they track that, but it would be certainly, especially as the airport comes online, how many people are leaving Winter Park to go to the airport. I know our numbers on the weekend are high, and that obviously points to people coming here rather than leaving, but it will be interesting to see how many people begin here.
I will ask and see if they can pull that data, and if we can pull the data from where they're originating from as well.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons we're having this discussion, at least in my mind, is to try to encourage the SunRail management to understand the importance of these statistics to each of their stations, not just to Winter Park, in terms of understanding where ridership starts, where it ends, relating the advertising of Saturday service to the frequency of use. There's a lot of management issues that I think SunRail's got to address if they're going to provide the kind of regional service that is going to get more people to use it. And so I wanted to have this discussion in part to make that point, and hopefully someone from SunRail management will be listening, and perhaps the person who runs SunRail management, maybe we can invite that person here for a discussion of what we expect as a city, and you know, have them add that into their book of thoughts as to what the demands on them are from all the different cities.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Any other questions for Troy?
I wasn't sure the purpose of this particular discussion, but since you're here for SunRail, I do have, there are a couple of things that I would like to know. I know that originally we in Winter Park talked about providing a last mile shuttle within the city to help get our residents to the SunRail. And I think at that point in time we were looking at $150,000 a year for something to run that. I'd love to hear where that discussion went. And then my question, if you could relate to the SunRail folks for me, is I know Altamont Springs did a deal with Uber, and my kids are
so
all my kids are all five of them are in that age bracket. They thought it was a joke because they said, "Mom, Uber's going to come. You don't have to pay Uber to come." But anyway, my question is, did that make a difference in the number of users in Altamont Springs going to So those are my two questions.
Okay.
Is that last mile, if we want our residents to use it,
From my understanding, speaking with other mayors, that did not...
It didn't pan out.
It did not make much of an impact.
So it was more just a marketing...
Okay. Any other questions for Troy?
Well, thank you for bringing these back to us.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks, Troy. Okay, folks, we have to adjourn for a few moments to have a quick action, hopefully a quick action on a CRA item. So we will adjourn and we will reconvene in a moment once Cindy gets her computer up and running. So we are adjourned for a few moments. Commission meeting on March 13th. It's 5:04. We will be taking public comments. Anybody wishing to address the commission, excuse me, on any items not on this agenda, now is your time to stand and be heard. Okay, we will close the floor to public comment, and we will move on to the consent agenda. Folks, look for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So move.
Okay. I'll second.
Great. We'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody wish to address the commission on item 9A and B? On items 9A and B, now is your time. Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Yep, just as an item of note, Mr. Mayor, I'm not on any of these contracts.
For the first time.
Sorry to hear that.
That's okay. I don't do the city contracts.
Okay, but, item 11A, yep. Jeff, Dory. Where are we at? Frank. You guys are moving from left to right on me. You're freaking out a little bit. Can't keep up.
Keep your eye on the housing planner. Jeff is out for this week, so
okay.
I'm B-League, as I told my boss today. I'm doing this. This is the second reading for the request by Rollins College. Mr. I think the city attorney has an ordinance.
Mayor?
Yes, Commissioner, I apologize. Mr.
No problem.
City attorney.
Ordinance number blank.
Simultaneous public reading, sir.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article Roman Rule 3, Zoning Regulations, Section 58-76, Commercial C-3 District, so as to add a new conditional use for facility operations and skilled trade shops serving a college or university, providing for codification, conflicts, severability, and an effective date, and ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article Roman Numeral 1, Comprehensive Plan, Future Land Use Map, so as to change the future land use designation of low-density residential to commercial on 875 square feet of the northwest corner of 483 Holt Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict severability and an effective date. And ordinance number blank and ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article Roman Numeral 3, Zoning and the official zoning map so as to change low-density residential R-2 zoning to commercial C-3 district zoning on 875 square feet on the northwest corner of 483 Holt Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict, severability, and an effective date.
Thank you. Ms. Stone.
Yes, at your last meeting, you approved, subject to these readings, the conditional use application for the building. We did send you the revised development agreement, which was in your packet, and we sent out those revised copies this week as well. And being that this is second reading, we're happy to answer any questions.
Great. Questions for staff?
I'd like to move it.
Okay, which one, Commissioner?
I'd like to move all of it.
So let's break them down into there's the zoning, the C3 zoning.
Right.
Take that as a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
For the comp plan change?
Yes, sir.
Second.
And for the R2 to C3?
Yes, sir.
Second.
Excellent. Okay. Any questions for staff? Any comments?
Just a quick question, if I could.
Sir, oh, Mr. Weldon, I just look here first. So, Mr. Weldon, we'll move right down the line.
I just wanted to confirm that the applicant has agreed with the modified developer's agreement as provided to us by Mr. Arden.
Yes, they have.
Thank you. Ms. Cooper?
Just for the record, why I am having to vote no on this is that I do appreciate everything that Rollins has done in working with the neighbors to try to minimize all of the impacts of the development. And for me, it just boiled down to two questions. Did I feel as though the use and the size were compatible with the residential neighborhood? And did I feel that it was good policy for us to modify our C3 zoning codes that will apply to all colleges, all universities, and all C3 zonings in order to enable the movement of the facilities operations off-site? And for me, the answer to those two things were no. So that's
why I felt it was necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Seidel.
Yeah, I just had a quick question, Dory, and maybe the applicant will need to answer. But the talking about the sidewalk to connect Holt Avenue to Pennsylvania, is that just at the corner right there at the intersection? That's not going back behind anything?
No.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
No, sir. I'm good.
Okay. Commissioner, before you vote, there is in your packet the development agreement. That was not included in the motions nor any of the ordinances. So if you see fit, you should probably consider that as your fourth motion.
Sorry.
Yes, sir.
Can I make that as can I include? I guess I can't include those because they're so separate. Okay, then we'll look for a fourth motion.
I'd like to move that.
I'll second it. Subject to a development agreement. It is the motion.
That is what we're moving.
Okay. Would the applicant like to speak? No, then we'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment. Y'all ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Okay, excellent. Then let's vote on the first one, which is the rezoning from C3, or to C3.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes, and just to be clear, that was to include the conditional use, the facility operations. The second vote here is on the comp plan to change from low density residential to commercial future land use on the 875 square feet.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. And now the third is the changing the low density residential R2 to commercial C3 on the 875 square feet.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
And I thought that's what I voted on before. I apologize. I'll have to correct that.
Okay. Is it to me? So let's hear Mr. Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. So, Commissioner, let me read the fourth one first,
right,
and then we'll
you.
Go back Great. If you don't
thank
mind. You. Will Cindy read the roll on the development agreement, please? Okay.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Okay, now, yes. So to clarify, Commissioner Cooper, I believe you voted yes on the first,
I thought it was the zoning.
Okay.
I thought that was the zoning change. Yes, I would like to change
that
to a no.
So, Cindy, on the first vote to change to include the conditional use to include
Perfect.
Facility operations, that is a 4-1 vote with Ms. Cooper voting no.
That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dory. Are you up still, Dory?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank
you all. Good luck with that project.
Yes, this is a request for a lot split at 1800 Edwin Boulevard. This went to the Planning and Zoning Board on December 6, 2016. With a recommendation of approval to create two lots that are 62.5 feet wide each in the R1A subdivision. It came to the City Commission in January, and the Commission had a tie vote of a 2-2, which is a denial of the application. Commissioner Sprinkle called it back last month. We did notice this, and it is a rehearing of this particular request for a lot split. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. We did receive a petition from some neighbors who had recommended approval of the lot split. We also did have a lady come in today who said that her signature was not correct on the petition. And she wanted you to know that she had not signed the petition, but her name was signed on the petition. So I found that disturbing enough to bring to your attention. But anyway, we are here at the request of the commission, and we do have a petition supporting this.
Okay. And P&Z was 5-0 on this?
Yes, sir.
Can you refresh my memory? We were 2-2 on this, but did we have someone recuse themselves?
Yes, who will be recusing himself again, Mr.
Yes,
Mayor.
Yes, 2-2, okay. Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. So, Mr. Seidel, you are recusing yourself.
Yes, sir.
And just to refresh, P&Z voted to recommend approval. What they would rather prefer to see are two smaller lots with smaller homes than one large lot with a home that is 7,000 or 8,000 square feet in size. So that the existing home that's on these lots right now will be torn down, and these lots will be split, and two new homes will go on here with a size of around 3,500 to 4,000 square feet.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the discussion really focused on some of the compatibility
mm-hmm.
in this neighborhood, because there were other homes similar to this
similar to these going up size-wise, lot size-wise?
You've got about 30% of the lots in this area that do not meet the 75 feet, that are smaller than the 75 feet required in the R1A. So you've got a subdivision that is primarily 75 feet or larger in this area for R1A lots. Staff had recommended against this lot split for that very reason. But we do understand P&Z's thought process that, you know, you could have a very large house in the middle of a subdivision where the average home size is 2,500 to 3,500 square feet.
Okay, and Dory, correct me if I'm wrong, was the 75-foot lot frontage changed with the, was it changed when the comprehensive plan was reapproved in 2009? Or
no,
was it always 75?
It's always been 75 feet under R1A.
On this?
In this area. Right. This is a standard R1A subdivision, so even though, and this lot currently, as the lot is structured today under the ownership, does meet that requirement. So it's creating the two lots that don't meet the 75 feet width. So you would be creating two lots with a 62.5-foot width as a variance.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
I do. Dory, I think I understand this. So I just want to make sure that I'm correct. A lot that is the 18,000-square-foot lot that's currently there today, that's restricted to a floor area ratio of 33%. Once we divide that into two smaller lots, those two lots are authorized to go to 38% floor area ratio. So we're adding an additional 5% allowance of floor area ratio now on two lots, plus each lot individually is allowed an exclusion for porches and such as that of up to 400 square feet. And so I just want to make sure people understand that it's not equal for equal. When you take a lot and you split it, a large lot has a lower floor area ratio than the small lots have, plus each lot individually has exclusions of up to 400 square feet. So,
Commissioner, have you translated that to square footage allowable?
I just ran a real rough on it. I didn't add in the exclusions and things, but it doesn't come. It's not equal. Is the point?
I'm talking. They're allowed to build another 200 square feet on their property?
Or I think it ends up about 1,500 square feet, but I don't. Well, I didn't have that right here. But
it's 10% of 18,000.
But for me, what as I
divided
as
by
I went
two,
through this
plus 400.
So
yeah, it's under.
Yeah, so I was thinking 1,000. 1,500,
including the 400 for the right, for an exterior right porch.
And so for me, we're looking at a piece of property here that failed the zoning test. So then we put a comp plan test in place to try to give them a second bite at the apple. Well, they failed the comp plan test, and I don't see 78 homes were included in the discussion and the averaging. And I understand that we have 17 homes represented on the petition. I get that. You know, but there's not a third thing that says go get a petition of the homes on the lot and then we'll let you do it. So for me, fails the comp plan, fails the zoning, and it creates more impervious space. And so I won't be changing my vote, I guess is the point.
And for me, you know, I hear all that and I agree with you in principle, but I think when we also, we're trying to remain, trying to keep some compatibility for the neighborhood. And that's where I struggle with it too.
Well, there is a way to do that, and I wasn't going to ask you to do it on this project, but I would like to ask you to start thinking about it. When people come in and ask to split their lots, they're asking for a favor. This isn't standard, this isn't an entitlement, it's not a property right. They're asking to split their lot and have two homes on it. And the way we decide whether we can do that or not is we average all of the homes within the 500-foot radius. We have the authority to reduce floor area ratio. We have the authority to reduce the size, to insist that the setbacks be equal to their neighbors. We have all that authority. So to me, and not today, I just want to ask you to think about this. if we are giving people an entitlement to split a lot based on the average of 78 homes, then perhaps there is some standard of compatibility that says the average of those 78 homes plus maybe it's 125% of that average. Maybe it's, you know what I'm saying? That what does it mean to be compatible? And compatible is more than just how wide your lot is. So anyway, as we move forward, I would love for us to think about, we're talking about wanting to maintain the character of our neighborhoods, then maybe that average should be more than just the average of the lot width. If you want to come in and ask for a special favor to divide your lot, then you need to consider compatibility with those 78 homes relative to mass. And we know that the mass in 1970 isn't what the mass is in today, but the biggest complaint I hear from neighbors and people who come to me is we're building too big of houses on these lots, all of the lots. Well, we cannot easily do anything about all the existing lots because of entitlements. But when they come and ask for a special favor, then we do have the authority. So just as we're moving forward, I would love for you to think about what it means to be compatible with our neighbors. And so that's just a thought I would love for you to think about.
Mr. Weldon?
The average FAR, by the way, in this neighborhood, I had it calculated, is 25% floor area ratio. That's the average FAR. So what we are doing is we're splitting it in half, giving a floor area ratio of 38%. In a neighborhood where the average FAR is 25%. So that's something for us to think about, what it means to be compatible.
Mr. Weld, do you have a comment?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Sennett?
Lots of thoughts, no comment.
Yeah.
Same here.
Only that I was the one who asked that we bring this back because after carefully going over it again and again and looking at it and counting and seeing that you have a lot of 50-foot lots there, this was originally three lots, not two lots even. It was originally three because there's two 50-foot lots and so much from another lot. So it's a very, it's a piece of property that in that neighborhood, I was afraid when I first looked at it that the people that had purchased the two 50-foot lots and made a 100-foot lot and built some very large houses would be distressed over this. When you go over there and you see what's been built across the street on a 50-foot lot, there's four in a row right across the street, you see that that's preferable to what's probably there right now. So I looked at it and said very simply, if the people that have purchased the very large lots are okay with this, I'm okay with this, simply because when I look at this, this would be a better use perhaps long term. I agree with you, Ms. Cooper, that we ought to start thinking about some of those things and changing our rules to accommodate that. They're not there now.
Oh, no, we have that authority now.
We have that authority now, but it's not the standard now. So I think we could maybe look at that because that is also what I hear. But this piece of property, that's a beautiful, great big piece of property. You can accommodate two houses on that piece of property. And again, that's why I wanted to bring it back and do what I thought was the right thing.
Okay, so let's hear from the applicant if you'd like. You certainly have the opportunity if you'd like.
Mark Squires, Winter Park Land, 122 South Park Avenue. We're representing the heirs who grew up on this property, and thank you very much, Commissioner Sprinkle, for bringing this back up. The house across the street that has been built by the applicant.
Patrick, can you get the Elmo? Are we on it?
All right. It is not upside down. It was actually built right side up. This is very emblematic of what's going on in that overall neighborhood, partly keyed on Lakemont Elementary and all the children's facilities nearby.
Mr. Squires, can you tell me what the width of that lot is? Which property is that? Do you know?
That he built on?
That you just shared.
62.5. It's like 6 inches wider than the one.
Okay.
Each of the one we're proposing.
Okay.
Our lot split winds up with two lots of 9,375 square feet. There are eight lots nearby that are under 9,000 square feet each. And so as Commissioner Sprinkle has pointed out, the theme of that street, not the overall scenario, because Edwin does not go west of Phelps, where a lot of bigger houses are. It's just that section right there. What could you build on these two new lots would fit in perfectly, and we appreciate your consideration.
Mr. Squires, I think Commissioner Cooper's point, though, is well taken, because it's something that we probably do hear the most at the commission level is it just seems like there's a lot of houses that are filling up their lot sizes. So I take your point, but it would be nicer if the houses were just a little bit smaller. I think that's probably what we get the most complaints about is, gosh, that big house is filling up that lot. So that's a discussion for another day with us, but thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Sir. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's open up the floor to public well, we don't have a motion on the table, so unless we have a motion.
I'd like to move it.
Okay. I'll second. Okay, great. So we have a motion and a second, and we will now open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item, please step forward.
Hi, I'm Kevin Klein. I'm a resident at 1740 Edwin Boulevard. My wife and I have lived on the street for 15 years with our 13-year-old daughter. We love living in Winter Park. It's just a great place to be. When I was born, my parents lived in Winter Park. I actually grew up in Sweetwater Oaks, but once I got out of Rollins College, I graduated there with an environmental studies degree. I moved right back to Winter Park, so love being here. My business is based here, actually in Winter Park. I removed the hazardous materials from this room.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah.
I feel better now.
Yeah. My dad group was in the construction industry. He was a home builder until I was my early teens, and then he went into the asbestos removal business, which I'm now in that business. I'm a general contractor, mechanical contractor, mold contractor. Also do a little bit of development. So I understand what it takes and what you guys have to go through.
Thank you.
I'm opposed to the lot split. Number one, I didn't attend the first meeting as I didn't even think it'd be considered due to all the factors that Mrs. Cooper just said. 75-foot lots are the bare minimum. I thought we had a plan, a future land use plan. One of the reasons we moved into that neighborhood is because it had some larger lots. In our neighborhood, in the area there, they seemed to do, when they originally designed it, they did a great job of putting different size lots on the streets. It seems like if you look around this neighboring streets, they also have one big lot on every street and several little lots and then medium lots. Consistency's there. I guess you can split lots to call it affordable housing. I don't know. It seems hard to believe in Winter Park there, so. The next thing that's happening here is we're adding more driveways to our street. We just had two driveways added on the northwest corner at Phelps and Lakemont. Those driveways didn't exist until a few months ago. We also have an easement between my house and the house to the west on the corner that's going up. We have two big houses going up on the corner also. But we have another easement, and my neighbor's requesting to put in a driveway there. So we're looking at, just in the past 15 years, potentially four new driveways on the street. That's a lot. Our street's narrow when the street, or not narrow, but when the street was designed, cars were smaller. And now we have the issue of parking, too. I see when our neighbors have parties, they've gone as far as renting parking spots across the street in the plaza and chauffeuring people over. Just to accommodate parking on the street already. You add more driveways, you're eliminating street side parking, which is critical with the smaller driveways. Additional traffic's another concern, which is adding more houses, adding more traffic, and adding more cars to it. When the streets were designed, people had less cars per household. Now we're adding more. Edwin Boulevard can easily support a large house. One thing that's nice about our street, it is wide. It's a brick street. We have a tall curb. We have wide easements on both sides of the streets. We have sidewalks on both sides of the streets. The south side of the street has deep lots. They're 150 feet deep. a big house. We have a great setback there. So putting a large house on that street would not impact the view of the street. It would look, it would settle in just fine. The idea that putting smaller houses is going to fit better, I don't see that. We could also, it's one of the few streets where we could fit a big house in there and not look out of place due to setback. When you start putting as a more houses on there, we also have a concern of water runoff, retention ponds that people are putting in to get these smaller, to get the, or swales, I guess they call them, look terrible. They're putting in bigger swales than they are swimming pools on these properties. Spoken to two builders about the swales. They say, oh, we have to put those in here to get them done, get our permits to build a house this big. Next owner come in here and fill them in when they're done, or just allow them to fill in. So we're not gaining anything there by putting a swale in, or we're creating a monitoring and maintenance issue. The other thing that the smaller lots don't appear to sell quite as fast as the big lots do in the area. I know my mom's looking for a big lot. She wants to move from Sweetwater into Winter Park. She won't consider anything less than 75 feet. I watched a house go up across the street from us, both the house on the corner and another house down the street, the one that's for sale currently. They were both torn down roughly the same time. The larger lot is the one with larger street frontage there. Already sold and somebody's moved into it. The other house down the street's been for sale for some time. Nobody's moved in. The house next door to 1800 Boulevard, just to the west, was for sale for almost a year. No takers, 50-foot lot with a two-story house put on it. Winter Park was a planned community. The founders had an excellent vision, made it a desirable place to live. We'd like to keep it that way. Having land use plans makes our community unique. We should stick by it. I also think if we allow this lot to be split, we're setting a precedence for the neighborhood. Some next builder is going to be back here asking to split a 100-foot lot, because if you get 62, you're halfway there. So you might as well go for 50-foot lots next. So that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes, please, sir. Are you?
Randy Lazarus. I'm a president of Classic Homes.
Are you the applicant?
I'm the applicant.
Would you mind, let me just see if there's anybody else that would like to speak from the public, and then you can certainly have the floor. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? No. Mr. Lazarus, please. Thank you.
Thanks again. I think what makes the street unique is the variety of sizes of the lots, from 100 foot down to 50 foot. I think a 62.5 foot meets the median of that. We did build across the street, same size, 62.5 foot. We have a very nice finished home. We've been building in Winter Park for 25 plus years. We have a nice finished product. I think it would complement the street. The existing home, obviously, I think we could improve the street with our new homes. And I think that helps everybody, and I think it's also unique to the street, to the exact street, as opposed to different areas. I just wanted to say that I hope you consider that the variety of the lots adds to the street.
Would you be able to tell me what percentage of the FAR you plan on using with your projects?
We haven't finished the complete design. We obviously have to stay within the regulations of the FAR. I don't know exactly, honestly.
Also, is it safe to say you'd maximize those, or would you look to come? Is that a condition that you could be comfortable with coming in a little bit under, so it doesn't feel like it's too massive of a project?
It's hard to commit to that.
Sure.
Because we don't have our design. We don't know economically what we can do with that. So it'd be hard to commit for that, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unless it's imposed.
Correct. You know. The other thing is, I don't know the previous person that spoke what size lot his is. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to know. 75.
So. Okay.
Well, Mr. Lazarus, what I was noticing was that the lot as it currently sits is limited to 33% FAR. The average of the lots that made this lot split possible are 25% FAR. The new entitlement that comes with the divided lot is 38% farm. So I would like very much to discuss with you the possibility of at least staying within the FAR that the lot currently has, which is it's a pretty significant, it's 33% FAR. So it's not like it's not like I'm saying to you, to be compatible, you must not be any more than the average, which could be some people's definition of compatible, but that's not reasonable.
I understand. What happens with us is there is the economics too of building new homes. Our costs are considerable, they go up monthly. So there is the economics to be able to build the new homes. So that's what makes it difficult for us to limit ourselves at this point. I think the regulations are what they are right now. I mean, that is the FAR, that is what it is. If in the future they change and they're reduced, then that's the new regulations. But I think those are the guidelines and what we need to stay within. And I just hope you understand that our position from an economic standpoint.
We're getting to build two houses instead of one.
Yeah, but either way, there's an impact. I think our impact is less. I mean, you could build a much larger house. It's somebody's opinion whether that fits in or not. But
all right. Well, thank you for at least considering that.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll comment on that last subject matter.
Sure.
I have no problem working through other ways to do this, but it's a very major problem that had to be considered very carefully because of its potential impact on the property values throughout the city, not just on one particular lot split. And to the extent that there are people looking to build a custom home or a spec home, they are reading our rules and they are coming in and making offers based upon a presumption of a single family house being able to be X. And I don't think that it's wise of us to change what X means at the last moment in front of the city commission once they've made those commercial commitments. Now,
of course, those commitments are made based on the lot size being X, too.
Right, I understand.
So I'm just hoping we could get some definition of compatible.
Well, the larger issue, I think, is where do we really go when we start looking at lowering FAR? What does that do to property values? What does that do to the real impact on compatibility? And you raised the question, what is compatibility? We've had numerous homes take advantage of the 38% number over the past 40 years. I believe it's been in effect. And I don't know that any neighborhood has lost its charm and character because those FARs were 38% instead of 33. So, So I'm skeptical of that argument.
I'm
not against the argument.
Introduce the conversation.
Yeah.
Because I think we do have, we create these environments.
Uh-huh.
And we're now creating this environment.
Yeah.
So I do feel somewhat responsible to try to think of a way to define compatibility.
So if we're not going to do that on this item, we have a motion and a second in front of us.
Mayor, may I clarify an issue, please?
Sure.
On the original staff recommendation coming out of, in the original recommendation coming out of P&Z, there was a condition that the final architectural elevations of the two proposed homes be of significant different architectural styles and front facades for each other. May we include that? May staff ask that you consider that as part of your motion? That was brought forward by.
That's fine.
That was
yes.
brought forward
yeah.
by.
Yeah, I'll second that as well.
Thank
sure.
You.
Great. So, folks, if there's no other discussion specific to this, and let's call to a vote. Okay, Cindy, please read the roll on the item as it was with the addition of the comment from P&Z regarding the articular or the different
staff. Frontages.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
She said staff.
P&Z recommended it.
P&Z recommended it.
Oh, okay,
it.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner Wellman?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes, and please let the record show that Commissioner Seidel had to recuse herself. Thank you all. And Mr. and Mrs. Klein, thank you for coming. And we understand, and we're trying to work through some of these issues as a city. Okay, we have Item 11C, Mr. Artiman.
Yes, sir. Ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, authorizing the conveyance of the city-owned property located at 2600 Lee Road pursuant to the proposal attached hereto as Exhibit B, providing for conflicts and an effective date.
This is on second reading, folks.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. Any further commission discussion? Nope. We'll open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on item 11C? Now is your time. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. City, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Sundell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. We are at City Commission Reports. Commissioner Sundell?
Yes. There's an election tomorrow, for those who aren't aware. Yes. Exactly. I went to the track meet on Saturday at the high school, and the sound was really good. I don't know if it's 100% correct yet, but the sound was much better. The track and everything looked great, and it's my understanding from my daughter, who was in the track meet, that that Winter Park won the track meet.
Oh,
I haven't
good.
Seen that officially anywhere, but that's what she told me.
Your daughter's in the track meet?
Track.
Yep. Yep.
I think you can take her word for it, then.
Yeah. Yep.
Anything else?
We've been talking about other things this week, you know.
Yeah, sure.
There's been a lot happening. No, that's it. It was just, you know, it was great to see the track. I actually got to walk out there earlier and feel it, and it's great track, and I think everyone had a great time with track meet.
Yeah,
so, Commissioner Mayor, good job on that.
Vice Mayor Sprinkle?
I guess we were at the Florida House party yesterday. That was one thing, and I know this is the best week to live in Winter Park. We got the art festival. They're going to be bringing them in with the train, and they're going to be all over the place, and everybody and their dogs having a party starting tonight. So, you know, it's going to be a great week in Winter Park.
Mr. Cooper.
Thank you for opening that discussion about compatibility. I do think we can do better. I look forward to exploring that some more. And Thursday, if you're available to come to the luncheon, that would be wonderful.
Already RSVP.
Mr. Weldon?
And I'll be voting. Greg, I got my hanger today.
Yes, just one thing. Back when we, you know, it's almost embarrassing to bring it up, in fact, but there's a matter of a certain ordinance we all agreed to regarding the legislation over feral cats in Mead Garden, and we had agreed that in March that we would revisit that, and the last chance in March to do that will be on the 27th, and I just wanted to know if the city manager intends to bring that back on the 27th.
I can add a little insight here.
If the city commission wants to consider it on the 27th, so...
Yeah, I knocked on the door of the lady that was trying to help us with the cats, and
yeah.
She said she could use a little more help. So I told her to
reach
out.
What does that mean, help us with?
Mean help feed them?
No, like she went out to... No. She actually runs the spray and neuter stuff, and so they were out there trying to find out how many cats there were, and there were some other questions, and so I just happened to knock on her door.
Good.
And so I spent a little bit of time there listening, but she hasn't reached out to me yet. I think I told her to do it after the election.
Well, staff was going to bring back a report, and I'd like to see it. That's
And I'm fine with bringing it next meeting, but you have three very meaty agenda items.
That's fine. I just wanted to bring it up as a reminder. April's fine with me.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's it.
Well, thank you.
That's
for
it.
Folks, there's a lot going on.
There is.
And thank you. Mr. Seidel, I wish you the best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you for participating and putting your name back out there. So it's something we've all done up here, and it's never easy.
So you have empathy. I like
to
that.
To yourself and your competitor,
yes,
we definitely understand and appreciate it.
Yep.
We do have a jam-packed meeting next week, folks, that is going to be... heavily attended, and so I would just ask for consideration going into that meeting that we are aware of that. I know sometimes I don't think we need a workshop, but I'm just trying to again to try to keep things moving so we're not here till 1 o'clock in the morning. I would just ask that we're all respectful of everybody's time and keep your commentary. Keep that in mind. Anyway, thank you all very much and happy day.